Welcome to Zero to Start, a podcast about immersive development that brings you inspiring conversations with immersive creators, developers, and industry leaders. I'm your host, Ceciliana Treviño. Subscribe to Zero to Start on your favorite podcast platform and follow us on LinkedIn. Ever since news broke late Friday afternoon, November 17th, that OpenAI's board of directors removed its founder and CEO, Sam Altman, the future of the company and what it means for the race to artificial general intelligence is anyone's guess. Joining me to put this fast-moving story into perspective is Avi Barsev, founder and president of Reality Prime, an independent consulting service providing world-class expertise in AR and VR design and engineering since 1997. Avi has been at the forefront of spatial computing for over 30 years. He co-invented the HoloLens AR headset in 2010 and led the experience prototyping team for Apple's Vision Pro and more from 2016 to 2019. Most recently, Avi is a founder and president of the XR Guild, a new nonprofit membership organization that seeks to support and educate professionals in XR on ethics and most positive outcomes for humanity. Let's get started. Thanks for joining me today, Avi. I really appreciate you taking the time at such short notice. With all this news around OpenAI and Sam Altman being removed as CEO, and then the tweets and the takes just didn't stop all weekend. Yeah. What a big drama. Tell us your thoughts and what you've been seeing.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it was such a big drama by itself means it was a failure. Like something really broke down in the process, because I've seen situations where CEOs have been replaced, and it should generally be a process where everybody might not agree with why, but everybody would sort of agree with the process and say, okay, at least it was handled well, and we may not like it, but we understand the reasons. I think people have, at this point, can only guess as to what the board was thinking when it fired Sam Altman in the first place and why. I could guess, but they haven't really said. And, you know, if anything, the right way to handle something like that is to sit down and have a conversation with the people who are most affected, including Sam Altman, and say, here are our concerns, and, you know, what can you do to meet our concerns? They made it sound like he had done something horribly wrong, which still may be the case, but they haven't provided any further evidence to that. But anyway, it should generally, for the sake of the employees and the shareholders and everybody, it should generally be a fairly non-dramatic thing. I mean, I think maybe people have been watching too much Succession on TV that they think it all happens like that, and it shouldn't. That's a failure when that happens. But the reasons are interesting. I mean, I think it's a unique company in the way that it was founded as a nonprofit. And then they realized they needed a lot more money than any nonprofit could raise. And so they carved out a limited profit company that the nonprofit controls. And the limited profit company could make a lot of people a lot of money, including the employees who have equity in that, something like equity anyway. And so they're all looking at these huge pay packages. And that can also severely affect how people look at things in the world. I mean, not everybody at OpenAI joined with the mission of OpenAI. A lot of them joined to build artificial general intelligence. They joined with the goal to make at least as much money as they would have made in the competitors to OpenAI, which at this point are millions of dollars in options and salaries and, you know, huge packages for joining, because the competition is so fierce among all the people who have expertise in AI. So anyway, you have this giant mix of conflicting ambitions or goals. And if you take the board at their word, then they're just trying to make sure that they're making everything safe. And if they're following the mission for OpenAI, which was to make this general intelligence, but to make sure it's safe for humanity. It doesn't mean that anybody in the company doesn't want it to be safe, but there's different levels of risk tolerance, I think, among a lot of these people. I think there's some people who say, build it and then see what the problems are. And there's other people who say, no, be super careful and don't release anything, because someone else is going to copy you. As we saw with OpenAI putting out ChatGPT early on, it really lit a fire under everybody to push out whatever R&D they had into public, whether it was ready or not. And everybody's like, oh, the restraints are off. We're just going to rush into this. So I can see why the board would have concerns. It just may be too late at this point to rein it back in. And the only option left may be to just go fast, but try as much as possible to make sure it comes out right.
you have Sam, who created so much value with his team, his company having this meteoric rise. It's worth something. What are people throwing around, like $90 billion?
Yeah, that's supposedly they were going to value the company in the next round there. And so if you're already in the company, you know, you have a certain number of equivalent of stock options, RSUs, or however they've done it. It probably is not a typical structure given the nonprofit. But you would have seen your money on paper be worth, you know, enough to retire, enough to buy an island for some people. And so that's a huge incentive for anybody, right? That money is money that people will have felt that they've earned and it's theirs. And if all of a sudden somebody comes along and says, no, we're going back to being a nonprofit, and so we're never going to make money, if that's what was being said and how people took it, I could see why at this point, what is it, over 500 out of the 700 employees have said that they're going to quit unless the board resigns. That's the latest I've heard. That's a big, I mean, it's an understatement to say it's a big number. That is the bulk of the company. And there would still be a company if all those people left, but it wouldn't be the same company. It probably wouldn't even be able to continue what it's been doing for the last year or so, given that, you know, that reduction. And then those people would, you know, probably go over to Microsoft or whoever else is promising to move ahead fast and give a lot of money. So there aren't a lot of great options left for the board. It seems like they've messed this up badly enough that they probably should resign just based on the process. You know, that's not me making a judgment as to whether they're hitting the mission or not, but just this amount of drama just indicates that things went completely off the rails. I just don't even see how that's possible.
What can you tell us about the board's determination of when they would reach artificial general intelligence? What's that threshold about?
Some parts of AI are already surpassing human capabilities and other parts are lagging. And the general definition of artificial general intelligence is that it's better than humans at most everything. But everybody has a slightly different definition. But for purposes of their contracts, apparently they had a very, very clear line that says when the board determines that they've made AGI, then they don't need to pay any money back to their investors, right? So the investors get a certain amount of profit capped at a certain dollar amount as a way to keep this thing all, you know, sort of a nonprofit. But as soon as they declare that AGI has been reached, everything resets. And so that's an important distinction. It doesn't mean that they're the best people to decide that, but for the purposes of the company and their agreements, they're probably the only people that could decide that. We would very much prefer in general that it's a more open process, that we debate it and it includes, you know, thousands of experts, millions of stakeholders, billions, if not, and that's something that we collectively talk about. But that's a different decision. That's a decision as to whether we collectively agree that the thing that has been created in some sense is alive. And that has other implications beyond the financials, right? That has implications of, like, can we ever turn it off? Like, once we've created something that we feel is conscious, are we kind of stuck with it? In the same way that if we had, you know, taken human DNA and spliced it with animals, like is that thing a human or not? I mean, does it have rights? Do we have to protect it? You know, at a certain point, people will be making the case that these various AI agents are alive and worth protecting. I don't think we're there yet. They're still just tools to most people, but we'll get there eventually. But anyway, the board is not there to decide that question. It's just a much more narrow question as to the deals they've worked out. And I don't know how they would ever really decide that except to have some kind of criteria that says it's better than humans at the following, you know, 30 tasks. It'll never be better than everybody at everything, right? There's things that some people are just really amazing at, but if it's better than most people at most things, then that's a big milestone. That's a big thing to be thinking about, especially if it's now available as a tool that anybody could use for relatively cheap. Obviously, that changes things. It changes the nature of work. It changes the nature of art in many ways and what we consider art. Those are all the conversations that people are having, you know, this year, if not before. And there's no clear answer. I mean, we would be happy just to have some resolution to the question of how do artists and creators get paid for their work in a world in which something could theoretically copy it and call it fair use and then recreate it and still call it fair use. I mean, it seems unfair. Semantically speaking, it's not a fair use if somebody who spent their life learning how to make a particular style of art is now out of a job, because the computer can copy everything they did and now do it for them. And it's bad for them. It might be good for the millions of people who might want that style and not want to pay as much as they would have had to pay to get that artist to do it for them. But we do need to figure out how to preserve creativity and humanity and all these things, and not just hand everything over to the IP landlords that want to own everything but not pay anybody. Humans by our nature are very, very likely to make mistakes just because it's possible and plausible, and because we haven't learned yet. And, you know, when we're at our best, we are watching other people make mistakes and going, hey, I'm not going to make that mistake because I saw somebody else fall down that flight of stairs. I'm not going to do the same thing they just did. But when we're at our worst, you see 100 people fall down that flight of stairs because none of them listened to the person that went before or paid attention. So we do both. I think, you know, there's a range of wisdom that people can apply. Like I said, when we're at our best, we are paying attention to all the mistakes and we are learning from them, and we are trying only ever to make new ones, right? Not that we're trying to make mistakes, but we don't want to make the same mistakes again and again. That's sort of the definition of stupidity for me. And we are doing some of that here. I think the problem with a lot of this AI work is that people aren't stopping necessarily to think about the near-term implications, not just the long-term ones of whether it's going to take over or not, but the near-term one of, boy, what does this do? What changes to societies that does this bring about? And are those changes, you know, maybe the changes are all inevitable, but maybe there's also a better pace that they can happen. Maybe they do need to get slowed down. Because if you have a situation, for example, where automation takes away the jobs of millions of people, it takes time to make sure those millions of people can do something else, right? Even if that was the right answer to automate something that nobody wants to do, even if that's the right thing to do, you don't want to do it so fast that you have millions of people who don't have time to adapt, right? And that's what we're facing, is the rate of change has increased so dramatically that people are left unable to cope with it. And there's multiple ways to go about this. For me, the best way is we should advance technologically. We should explore space. We should do all these things. We should explore the oceans as well. We should explore everything we can explore, but we should do it at a pace that allows humanity to absorb the changes and to adapt to the changes and not leave people behind. Because I think we've done that way too much, where the few people who rush in first get the benefit and everybody else kind of, you know, I mean, this goes back to the gold rushes, right? It's almost considered dogma in Silicon Valley that you want to be the company that's selling the land and the pans, right? You don't want to be the gold miner. You want to be the one selling the infrastructure for the gold miners, because only 1% of the gold miners are actually going to make any money, but 100% of them need to pay to get there. They need to pay for the transit. They need to pay for the tools, right? And so if you want a guaranteed income, you become the broker. And that's, you know, another way of saying build the platform. You build the platform, and then you can't lose if everybody's using it, even if society loses, even if lots and lots of individual people lose as a result, you still win. And that's what we're seeing across the board. We've seen it with Facebook and Meta, that's their DNA, is to be the ones to make that money, to get in there and think less about the long-term implications. And we're seeing it with a lot of the AI work happening in different companies.
That brings us back to this question over what specifically was the board referring to when it said that Sam Altman wasn't being candid in his conversations, which, right. I've seen stories where they're talking about Sam Altman was talking to investors about creating an AI chip.
Right. That's one of them. There's two that I've heard. It's hard to know what's true, but getting venture capital to spin up a chip company is definitely one of them. And honestly, I don't know if that would have been part of OpenAI or not. OpenAI clearly needs more chips, right? Everybody is complaining about a chip shortage, and NVIDIA is the only one really making a ton of money here, because they're able to sell their chips at a premium. They definitely can see the need for all these big companies are looking at how can we roll our own chips so we can do that cheaper. These are companies that have already built custom hardware for the cloud computing efforts, right? Google has built their own custom hardware to try to reduce the cost of running so many servers at once. Facebook's looked at this, at least if they haven't done it. They had teams working on custom chip design. So everybody's thinking hard about how do we make chips that are more efficient and scale better and use less power. And I mean, more at the bottom line, I guess, is less money to be able to, you know, train these various models. So anyway, that was one of them for sure. But it could have been under the context of a whole new company that he would do, mm-hmm. you know, Elon Musk style in his free time, getting VC investment for that. Who knows? It could have been. Or it could have just been something he didn't tell the board about related to OpenAI. The other theory was that it was related to safety. And the reason why that seems somewhat plausible is that the chief scientist has been doing a lot of interviews and has a lot of thoughts, and almost the stuff is almost seeming to take on cult-like proportions in terms of people believing the AGI is right around the corner or not. And so it may have been that they weren't happy with his statements about what are you going to do if you develop AGI or how far away is it? And that's something the board certainly is chartered with thinking about, right? That's one of their jobs, is to be thinking about the overall deployment of things like that, whether they should be deployed or not, whether they should be studied first. So that's a theory as to what happened. And it could be both, it could be neither. But so far, they haven't put forth any evidence that I've seen that he did anything wrong or malfeasance or anything like that.
Their chief scientist, Ilya Sutskever, who is alleged to have led the move, has now changed his view, posting something on X this morning. I deeply regret my participation in the board's actions. I never intended to harm OpenAI. I love everything we've built together, and I will do everything I can to reunite the company.
And he did apparently sign the letter that said he would, for everybody, the 500 or 50 people or so said they would quit if the board didn't resign at this point. His name is on that letter. Mira Murati, who got appointed as the interim CEO, her name is first on that letter. So she was the first person to sign it, most likely wrote it. She's the first one to sign it, or at least they brought it to her first. But there's a lot of people who are super unhappy. And it sounds like all what the board wanted to do was just to replace Sam, but keep Greg Brockman on, not on the board, but on as an employee. So they were trying to split the difference and get him off the board, but get, and that doesn't seem smart either. I mean, it's just really, you know, at the board of directors level, as I was saying in the beginning, you got to be open about these things and try to discuss and figure out the right path and not play a game. I mean, technically, they probably didn't have to notify Microsoft, but God, wouldn't it be a good idea to take the company who's pledged, what, $20 billion and see what they thought? Like, you want to kind of take the temperature of that before you do, even if they didn't have a vote. You want to kind of see, like, you'd almost want to get a promise from Satya to say, hey, if we do this, are you okay with it as long as we keep meeting our obligations to you? You know, the CEOs do get replaced. That does happen. And there are reasons, there are good reasons, there's bad reasons. There's sometimes it's politics, sometimes it's a lack of trust. But in the best cases, the CEOs will leave quietly and try to help everybody with the transition. And
right. There's a plan.
There's usually a plan in place for orderly transition, and this one didn't seem to be that. All I could guess, and my best guess, is just that the board freaked out and they thought this is the last opportunity they're going to have to try to keep control over the process. Like once you have too many outside investors, even if they don't control the nonprofit, then the company is effectively free of board intervention, which does seem to be what happened, right? If you look at the current state of things as of Monday morning, it does seem to be that the board is impotent. Like it had no real power because it fired Sam Altman, but then was being forced to rehire them. And now they're faced with the dilemma of the majority of the company quitting unless they quit. So basically that says that they were impotent from the beginning and they just didn't realize it. And they were trying to exercise their power while they felt they still had it. It doesn't mean there isn't a smart way they could have done this, that they could have probably pulled off some kind of a management change, but they didn't do it the smart way.
And to your point, I think they would have had to have really had a guiding hand with Microsoft. And so now what they have is Sam Altman being hired directly by Microsoft with Brockman. All these employees that are leaving may join Sam in this new organization at Microsoft. So now Microsoft is a rival to their own company that they're investing in.
Yeah. And I would be willing to bet, I haven't seen the deal with Microsoft, but you think of a deal of this size, there's probably a clause in the deal that says that Microsoft's not allowed to poach employees from OpenAI, right? That usually when you get into bed with a company, you want to protect yourself in a couple of ways. And one is that Microsoft wouldn't just go ahead and poach everybody, which technically they're not doing at this point. If both of the top two people, you know, left, one was fired, one quit, they're available. And there's nothing to stop Microsoft from making a job offer. Microsoft theoretically would have to be super careful about any of the subsequent employees, because if they're enticed to leave, if that clause exists, and I don't know that it does, but if it does, then that could be a big lawsuit. But the board itself could potentially face a big lawsuit from any of the shareholders claiming they didn't act, you know, according to their responsibilities. Not because necessarily they weren't acting, and I'm not a lawyer, so don't take anything I'm saying as legal interpretation or legal advice, but if the board can show that they were acting in the charter of the nonprofit, then they're safe. But if the board is taking the claim that even destroying the company is in the charter, that's probably not going to hold up. I mean, that doesn't seem to make any sense, that if their job is to be stewards of the company, then the only reason to end the company is if the company is financially not viable or imminently about to destroy the world, one of those two things. Short of that, their job is to try to make the company as successful as it can be. In the case of a nonprofit, as socially successful, not just that the employees are successful, but that the company is doing good for the world. They could lose their nonprofit status if they changed their mission to be something where they were aggressively pursuing something other than the benefits of society.
I just find it absolutely riveting. I have just been a casual user of ChatGPT shortly after it launched last year. OpenAI makes DALL-E, the text-to-image generator, and other AI products.
Yeah, they have an API. The OpenAI API has enabled probably thousands of startups to do things that might not have been possible before. I'll caveat that, though, to say that anybody who does have a startup that relies on a platform like that needs to be super careful, right? Because if you're out there creating a feature like the best AI calendar app that can figure out when you should meet, let's say, whichever of those startups is most successful, there's a couple of outcomes. One is you get bought, you become a feature of a bigger platform, like a Facebook type platform or a Google. Getting bought is one way out. Becoming super popular is also a great way to make a little money in the short term. But when you wind up competing with the platform itself, as happens in the case of all these big companies, you have to always figure that the company at a certain point will have an incentive to do it themselves. Like, you've showed them the way, you've outsourced the risk by doing a startup and bootstrapping it, and now you've proven that you've got traction. What is to stop the big company from just doing what you're doing as a startup? There's really nothing except patents, potentially. And if you're building on their technology, what are you going to patent?
There's a lot of talk about the timing and how fast it was. And the general consensus is that there was a tipping point on
the dev day.
On the dev day. No, and that was November 6th. So at the beginning of the month,
yeah,
Sam gave a keynote and started announcing, I think he announced the dev store.
Yeah, that's huge. So it's not only the dev store. So anybody can now make their own human sounding voice agent to do lots of things. So that just enabled a whole bunch of functionality for a lot more, not just startups, but anybody who wanted it. And frankly, you know, our XR Guild org was thinking of something like that, because we want to build a virtual librarian. We want somebody to help us manage the large number of documents there are about ethical practices. And so you should be able to ask somebody a question and actually get an answer that's not just a made up one, but actually get, you know, real research papers and things like that. You know, we'd love to do that too. There's lots of great reasons to use this stuff. But they did open the door to a lot of potential dangers as well, because all of these agents also have access to the internet. And I think one of the biggest fears among those researchers is that the AI will be smart enough to escape any constraints that you put it on, right? And that doesn't necessarily mean copying its code literally outside, but maybe it does. Maybe it means, you know, so at some point an AI will be smart enough to go reserve a bunch of compute and pay for it and then transfer its code and then, you know, rewrite its code. So who knows? But in any event, I think I could see why it was a little bit scary to some people, because the people who are thinking about reining this in and keeping it on a slower burn, this was just sort of lighting a match under the big potential barn fire of all the stuff that can happen, especially the open internet connections where the agents can now theoretically do anything. But also the fact that there could just be now millions and millions of chatbots that are out there, that's in advance of any of the rules that we really have, right? The White House just put out guidelines, but you don't yet see any of that implemented. You don't see AI articles yet that say the article was written by AI, even though people are doing it, clearly. You don't see even companies who, I don't know, I'm not really looking for a job, but there's all these automated resume intake systems and also resume generating systems that are AI driven. But I don't see a lot of disclosure about that process either. So anyway, we're still a long ways from having absorbed these changes and made sure that we have policies in place to handle them and are able to catch and call out and punish bad actors when they do things that are wrong. So maybe the board was saying, no, we got to slow this down. We don't need to go so fast. We're ahead. And all we're doing is pushing every other company to drop everything and go run on this direction. And is that good? Is that really fulfilling the goal of the original charter of OpenAI? Probably not. So I could see that sentiment that as of now, they're doing the most of any company to push things ahead, which some people could interpret as doing more harm than good right now.
And just taking a look at their website, I'll include some of these links in the show notes. They have a lot to say around their focus on safety. They have a charter. They look like they're trying to be somewhat transparent about what their values are and their intentions. This rift, it just seems like the impact that they're having is beyond like what we can comprehend right now. Like this changes the timeline, doesn't it?
Yeah. And that's something I've always worried about with my work as well, though I don't think of myself as somebody building AI. I certainly use a lot of it. But in other products that I've worked on, it's hard not to have the thought that even if I do this ethically, even if I make sure that we are as safe as possible, as non-exploitive as possible, and we're only ever helping people, the fact that we're doing this and releasing that is going to cause somebody else who wants to catch up to do it in a crappier way. Because they don't know the difference. The other people don't know all the deliberations that we might have had to figure out the best way to do it. And they're doing a very shallow copy of what we're trying to do. And I'll take the Apple Vision Pro as a good example. I mean, I can't talk about everything that was talked about behind closed doors, but I can tell you the people I worked with were 100% concerned about making something that was ethically built that would help people and not be used exploitively, even by third parties. That there's ways in which the platform locks down what third parties can do so that that it minimizes the harm that a third party app could do on this platform in terms of, let's say, eye gaze, right? When you're building a cooperative app, you are limited from sampling the data in many ways, right? You only know when somebody looks at your app, not when they look anywhere. So that's a good example of something that's designed to increase safety. But that doesn't mean another company who's building their own headset with eye tracking will do the same thing. They may not understand why that limitation is there, or they may think it's a competitive advantage to be more, they'll call it open. They'll call themselves being less parochial and more open, but I'd call it being less safe. But they have their point of view. And this happens a lot where companies are just in such a rush to catch up that they're not really thinking through what they're doing. They're just shallow copying what someone else does. And OpenAI may be thinking that, maybe thinking because they're ahead, they have a mission to actually explain the reasons they've done things. And if I were there, I probably would be making an argument too, that part of their mission should be to document why they make the decisions they make and what could go wrong, and to teach everybody else who's following on what not to do.
To be the light, the truth, and the way.
Yeah, but you see a little bit. I mean, you see the charter here, but what needs to be shared, I think, that isn't shared is all the lessons learned. Like, here's something we tried, and here's how bad it was, and here's why we didn't release it. Some people will listen to that, not everybody, but some people will learn from that. And, you know, really be just as open as possible. Like, if someone was going to make this librarian thing I mentioned we want to make, it should be OpenAI, who's building their own sort of ethical advisor to help people make the best choices. But it doesn't feel like that's top of their list. It feels like they just want people to think that they're ethical, and maybe they are, maybe they aren't. It's hard to tell. But it's certainly not helping everybody else the way they could.
Tell us about the XR Guild, your mission, and how listeners can get involved and support.
The last part is the easiest. Just you go to xrguild.org. So it's a .org. It's actually a 501 C3 charity, officially registered.
I remember we had that breakfast discussion.
You were the one who advised me on how to do that right from prior experience. So I did that first. I went through LegalZoom and got paid the money out of pocket to get everything done right, and got our official tax-exempt status as well, pretty fast, actually remarkably fast. We were declared, you know, that you can donate to us and deduct it as a charity. So that brings with it a bunch of things we want to be super careful of. So we don't pay anybody. Our directors are unpaid. Our offices are unpaid. In fact, we haven't put that much effort into fundraising yet because we want to build out our services first. And so first, it's a membership organization, which is actually a little bit rare for a 501c3 that often they have officers and they do things, but ours is a membership org that theoretically any individual can join. The only requirements is that you think of yourself as a professional in the field. That could even be a student though, honestly, but if it's something you want to do for a living, that's one requirement. The other one is that you read our principles and agree to the principles, which I think are pretty easy to agree to. And that's it. That's all you need to join. We're not even asking for any dues at this point.
Can you go into the principles just a little bit?
Sure. So the principles were formed from a combination of things. I worked with Tony Parisi, who had come up with the 7 rules for the metaverse that I thought were pretty profound and usable. We condensed those into 3 of our 12 principles. So that stuff is pretty well incorporated. We also put in a bunch of principles around child safety and protecting people. But basically the principles, there's 12 of them, they boil down to fairly specific guidelines. Like the worst kind of guidelines are the ones just said that say be good. Because what does that mean, right? Everybody has a different definition of being good. Even the people who do crap in the world don't necessarily think they are until later they see it. But
yeah, do good, and then you're like, make good crap.
Yeah, sorry. like you know, we're putting crap out in the world, but we're doing it as benefit to everybody. I mean, you see that. You see people saying, we're building the cheapest crap that we possibly can, so it's totally accessible and everybody can use it. But I'm like, yeah, but it's crap. So just because it's cheaper and more accessible doesn't mean it's better. So anyway, we have principles around the idea of look at what you're doing and make sure that you're not doing harm to people. Be respectful of different points of view. That means different backgrounds. That means all of the normal DEI stuff that we have to be thinking about, in addition to being sensitive to people who may have various reasons why AR, VR equipment, the hardware, is hard for them to use, right? There are lots of considerations around making it not just cheap, but usable, right? And this goes under accessibility, but it also goes under usability. Principles around things related to exploitation, that there are lots of ways in which technology is used to exploit people today. Even if it's just to create stickiness for your app, that meaning mm-hmm. getting people to come back when they try to leave so that you're dominating their time. We put in a bunch of principles around all of those concepts and had it be just good enough so people could read those and decide, yeah, I want to join, I care about all these things, but also have it be open-ended enough so that we can change it. As time goes on, you know, maybe in 10 years we don't call things the metaverse. That's entirely possible given how the term has been hyped up and, you know, diminished over time. Cyberspace went through the same thing. So we don't really know that everyone's going to call it metaverse. So we'll revise these things and revamp them for the future. But we did include thinking about a lot of AI. People don't realize how much of spatial computing and XR is based on AI. All of the tracking, all of the world understanding, body sensing, biometrics, all that stuff is heavily driven by AI. So I've been exposed and using all that stuff for many, many years now. For other people, it's a new thing for them to see how powerful AI is. But for folks I work with, it's an everyday thing. All the computer vision stuff, all the machine learning stuff. Anyway, so there's lots of principles around that as well. And so I would encourage people to go to the website. You can easily find the principles if you go to xrguild.org/principles. They're right there. And when you sign up to join, it'll ask you just to checkbox each one of those just to make sure you agree, and then you're in. Now, what are we going to do? The question is, what good can we do the world? Just asking people to agree to a set of principles is not much. There's no enforcement. We're not going to really kick anybody out unless it's egregious that they're clearly violating the principles. We might take a vote down the road and say somebody is, you know, joined us under false pretenses. But honestly, it's hard to imagine that happening. But what we want to do is be a positive force for information, for support. And one of the ways I like to describe this is, as you may have heard of, like a moral support system where people have friends and family and other people they can count on. That's a moral support system, an emotional support system. When you need it, when things go badly, you have it there to fall back on. What we're trying to build is an ethical support system so that you have people in your network that you know that you can talk to. They may be mentors, they may be peers in the same company that you're in, but people that you know that you can talk to when things get rough around ethical decisions. Like you may be a PM on a product inside of one of these big companies, and you're really worried that this decision that you're about to make is going to cause harm. So you could both lean on us to help get information as to whether it is a valid concern or something that could be easily fixed. But then you decide you want to fix it, but the boss says no. The boss says no, your solution is too expensive. We're going to do it the bad way, because we have to ship. So we want to give you the tools so that you can come back to the boss and say, you know what, it's actually going to be cheaper to do it the right way. Here's three places where that's been done before, and we've learned from this, and so we can make better decisions. And we want to give you that ammunition to be able to go back to the larger teams, the larger orgs, and make the right decisions, which is why we don't have to focus on the CEOs. We don't have to focus on the people at the top of the company, although it would be good for them to be better informed. We have to focus on the people who are making the day-to-day decisions, who are on the line, as they say, making the hard calls every day, in order to give them more support and have them be able to make the best possible decisions they can make. That's what we hope to offer. So we're going to be ramping up a mentoring service. We're going to be ramping up this library that should help people find information. All these things are there to try to make sure that everybody who cares can actually act on that caring to do a better job whenever they want. But we're not a union. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to collective bargain. We're not going to all threaten to quit or anything like that. We're just going to try to educate.
No strikes, no virtual world strike.
No virtual strikes. I mean, you know, people can do that on their own. You know, this is not about organizing. This is about creating a support system for people.
Like a community think tank.
Exactly. Exactly. Our collective intelligence is always going to be greater than any one of our individual intelligences. So we want to try to share that information as much as possible within the limits of NDAs, et cetera. We can't share inside information in the companies, but hey, if somebody's under NDA in a company, but we can find three other people who are also within that same umbrella who feel the same way, those are three people who can talk about the specifics. And so we can help people find each other that way as well. You may never know that the person whose office is down the hall would totally be there to back you up if they only knew what you were dealing with.
And you wouldn't have to resort to a coup to find out either.
Exactly. Like if OpenAI had been indoctrinated kind of with the thinking of the XR Guild, there would have been way more public conversations about anyone's concerns and where things are going. And especially for a company that's not looking for public investment, they have a lot more room to be more open and live up to their name. You know, open doesn't always just mean open source. Open can mean open dialogue. Open can mean we're going to spend a lot more of our time sharing our thinking with the world and trying to get everybody up to speed on the technology and where it's going. And I don't think they've done a great job of that so far. I mean, they've made media appearances, but you know, given all the resources they have, they could have done much more in terms of education and outreach and creating think tanks, including outside people. And they say they wanted to. I mean, that just maybe they haven't gotten to it, but they said they want this to be much more democratic than it's been. I just haven't seen that. I haven't seen the evidence of that yet.
What seems so nefarious is if Sam was doing something wrong, if they told him, this is where we have concerns around your behavior, you need to take these steps in order to become realigned with the mission. It's like he didn't even have a chance to address what their concerns were because they just assumed that he wouldn't respond to that.
Right. That's where people go wrong, is when they don't give everyone enough credit to expect that they would try to do the right thing. I think you have to go into these things saying, we expect everyone to be on their best behavior and to do the right thing, and not, you know, the emotional knee-jerk response that some people might have. I mean, these are people at a high level of accomplishment, right? These are people who...
The highest,
right? They should be very, very high functioning individuals and not subject to some of the succession-like behaviors of people who in the story had a very stunted emotional development, right? Because of various forms of abuse. And in the story, pretty much all of the kids had issues, right? And the father had issues because of his upbringing as well. So everybody in that story had issues that made them act poorly and generally undermine themselves, right? Almost every single one of them in the story. I won't give away for anybody else's.
But that's why it makes it so good.
It's about human failings. Exactly. That makes it a great story. But in real life, I think we want people to be on their best behavior and we want to expect that of them and give them a chance to make a mistake first before you assume they're going to try to, you know, circumvent you or countervene you. I mean, it seems like what this has proven, assuming this is what happened, assuming the board rushed this decision in order to prevent Sam Altman from doing anything against them, that would have been a bad decision because clearly it wasn't over. just firing him was not enough to make the story go away and to lose power. He has a ton of power because people look up to him, people follow him, and he has all this clout. So that doesn't go away. He was, if they fired him, he was absolutely going to start a new company to continue the mission differently, and probably a for-profit company this time, or set up a whole new board of a whole new nonprofit and do that differently. He had all these options, but just firing him doesn't make him stop, right? If he was truly wrong, you have to try to first appeal to him and try to set him straight if he was wrong with what he was doing. Anyway, so it's disappointing that people act like that, but I've seen it in other places as well. I've seen other situations that I can't talk about where there's a rush because you're worried about what somebody's going to do to abuse the power that they're about to lose. There's a rush to get rid of them. And the right answer is no, you know what? Just level with them. Level with them what your concerns are and then actually discuss a wide range of potential outcomes and see which one is the best for everybody.
Any final thoughts or words of encouragement to people that are contemplating getting into spatial computing and want to dive in?
I think now is the time. I mean, look, there was a ton of hype around the metaverse a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, with Facebook taking on the name Meta. And that would have been a place where a lot of people got attracted and said, oh, this is interesting. Let me get in there. And then there's sort of now a little bit of a lull as AI is in the spotlight. But if people get into the space now, we're not very far away from everybody having their own personal Jarvis or notebook that is intelligent, that tells them all about the universe, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy or whatever you want to call it, illustrated primer, things coming from fiction. And all these technologies are converging such that you won't call them AR, VR or AI. Spatial computing so far, I think, is the best general term, but it also rolls up effective computing and ambient computing. All these things are coming together. But to me, spatial is the most exciting because it's where computers finally get to leave behind the glass, right? They're stuck behind the glass today on our screens, and they're going to begin to interact with us in our world, in the natural world, as agents, as personified agents, as AI agents, whatever. And now is the time to be building those things right, because we have a couple of years and we have only a little bit of time left to get it right before these things become so powerful that any abuses are going to be substantial. So we have to really lay down the rules, the norms now. So I'd say if it's interesting to you, get involved.
Well, thanks so much, Avi, for joining me to unravel a bit of this developing saga. I'm sure that a lot will change in the next 24 hours before this episode is released, but it's been great catching up with you, and I really appreciate you providing a lot more context for this. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. It's been great spending the hour with you.
I hope this episode of Zero to Start inspires you to savor this moment in time before the emergence of a shiny new digital consciousness overtakes life as we know it. How do you think AI will impact human rights, the way we live, work, or how we define what makes us unique? Let us know on the Zero to Start LinkedIn page. Be sure to check the show notes for how you can connect with Avi and the XR Guild. You'll also find lots of goodies and links for OpenAI and emergency podcasts across the land, past Zero to Start episodes covering Metaverse Safety Week and the rise of spatial analytics. Thanks for listening. Until next time, happy holidays and happy installing.